ladies and gentlemen.
British Columbia.
You're listening to Pacific Town Sound Radio.
Hello and welcome to Pacific Sound Radio, your go-to source for everything happening in the Vancouver music scene. I'm James Olson.
And I'm Travis Noel.
Today is our final double feature episode of 2018, and we are ending this segment off on a high note. In our first hour, we will be joined by multi-instrumentalist and sound engineer Harley Small and his live band to chat about their diverse range of influences, their latest single, and their plans for 2019. And in our second hour, we will be joined by alt-folk singer-songwriter Sam Lynch to talk about her debut EP, Lights and Lines, and her adventures on the road over this past year. But first, we have some news to cover. What's been going on this week, Travis?
All right, well, first up, Chad Kroeger of Nickelback is going to be on Devin Townsend's new album.
It's an interesting development. I'm a Devin Townsend fan, but I can't say I'm much of a Nickelback fan, personally.
I mean, I feel like they've got the 50-50 split.
Of both?
Of fans? Nickelback.
I would say there are more Nickelback fans per capita than Devin Townsend fans, but...
Sure, but like Nickelback, yeah, they love them or hate them.
Yes. Yeah, okay, that's like what 50-50 you're 50-50 saying. Split. Yeah, I thought you were talking about the ratio of Devin Townsend to Nickelback fans. I'm like, well, I like Devin, and I wish the split was a little bit more generous, but I wouldn't say that math's entirely accurate.
You have to choose one. You can't be a fan of both.
Devin Townsend or Nickelback, and I guess I'm in the Devin Townsend camp. But I'm interested to hear the song and how their voices fit together if it's a singing collaboration.
Yeah, the two formed what some would call an unlikely friendship. Some fans on Twitter are not impressed with that choice. Believe it or not, some people on Twitter have opinions. And they think that just because they have opinions that they should be mean.
I think you just described the internet.
What? Who cares what they think? They're friends. And
yeah, I don't think Chad or Devin particularly cares one way or another.
Like, Devin, I think, is like crazy impressed with Chad. Just like on the fact that he has so many like haters. And it doesn't bug him.
Yeah.
Like, he deals with that very well.
Yeah, well, I mean...
604 Records is lit, son.
Chad and Nickelback are extremely successful at what they do. Mm-hmm. I don't really care for their music, but I can't knock them for making a very, very successful career out of it.
Absolutely. Also in the news, Baby It's Cold Outside is being pulled from Canadian radio stations operated by the CBC, Bell Media, and Rogers. The song has had some controversy for a long while with lines like, "What's in this drink?" and "Baby, don't hold out." I'm cool with this decision because, yeah, it's not that cool of a song, especially by today's standards. And most important, it's not even really Christmassy. It's wintry. It's like...
But there's a few, not to say that there's that these songs that I'm going to mention have controversy attached to them, but there's a few other songs like that where, like, Winter Wonderland, I think they directly mention Christmas in the lyrics, but...
Is that the one with the Parson Brown?
Yeah. Well, actually,
Snowman?
Yeah.
I never understood that. Am I supposed to know who Parson Brown is? I don't know him from the song, and he's a snowman. And pretending.
I don't know. I don't know the story. I really don't know anything about the lyrics of Winter Wonderland, and I understand, though, why people are uncomfortable nowadays with Baby It's Cold Outside.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense.
I mean, I'm the sort of person that largely listens to instrumental Christmas music because I find...
Some cool jazz?
Yeah. I don't know. I just associate... I just like listening to jazz instrumental renditions of the songs myself because, you know what, I'm just going to bring this story up anyhow. I was doing some Christmas shopping last week, and I was in Indigo or Chapters, whatever it's called. And I think it's Adam Levine, but they, Adam Levine, I'm going to say it's Adam Levine. Avril Levine is not the singer of Maroon 5. Adam Levine from Maroon 5 was doing a rendition of So This Is Christmas by John Lennon. I'm not really a huge fan of that, the original anyhow, but, he sounded really bad. He sounded like, Yeah, just bad Adam Levine songs. Sounds like a dog whistle to me. So that's
Adam,
why.
Adam, if you're listening, thank you for listening. We really appreciate it.
But maybe fire your vocal coach or hire a new one.
Yeah.
But anyhow, that's why I listen to instrumental yeah. Christmas music yeah. anyhow. But.
All right. And also in the news this week, pretty neat thing if you like music and Christmas and foiling burglars' plans. The Vancouver Symphony Orchestra will be playing the music from Home Alone along with playing the film at the Orpheum Theater coming up on the 14th and 15th next week. That's pretty awesome. The soundtrack to that film is, as James would say, hella dope, bro. James, as you know, is famous for saying hella dope, bro. And kind of like a skater voice.
Bruh.
That's not true.
I wonder if Joe Pesci's the conductor. That'd be hilarious.
Yes.
Come on, no adagio. What the...
I can actually verify that right now.
That Joe Pesci is the conductor of that orchestra?
Yes.
Fantastic. Well, I have to go now.
Yeah. Yeah, you see any shows this week?
What did I see this week? Did I see any shows this week? You know, I think this might have been a show this week. No, actually, sorry. I was at a open mic on Thursday night.
Oh.
Chelsea from Old Soul Rebel. Hosts an open mic at Café du Soleil. I'm not sure how regularly. I want to say at least once a month.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of fun.
How'd that go?
Went well.
Nice.
I was there for a few hours. I can't remember exactly who played, but it was a good mix of people.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually, I think there was at least one couple that went up with that percussive box, and I always forget the name.
What's it Roomba. Called?
No, there's a couple with a percussive box and guitar, and they
nice.
It was great, mm-hmm. and yeah, it was a good time. So that was the one show I went to, yeah. more of an open mic thing. But what about you? Did you head up any shows this week?
Last show I went to, I guess, would have been in the Snug on Sunday a
okay.
week ago.
Yeah.
You know, Chad and Kel.
That was awesome.
Chad Gilmore and Kel Roman. It was very, very good. Cassidy yeah. Waring was here, sang a song.
Yes.
I forget her name with also... with Chad.
Yeah.
She was super cool.
Yeah, she was great. There was definitely some Fleetwood Mac mm-hmm. style melodies going on.
Very, very good. And I also saw the Nutcracker Ballet at the Queen
of the
Theater.
How was that? I've seen a version of that. I was at like the Surrey Art Center, I think. I'm sure the one you saw was a little bit more higher production values.
I'd hope so. Like the something ballet of Winnipeg or...
Oh.
I don't know. It was fancy.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Another weird fun fact that I know somehow, but I heard that Tchaikovsky hated the Nutcracker Suite, and go figure, it's his most popular work.
Mm-hmm. Classic Tchaikovsky.
Nailed it.
Yes, I know my pronunciation.
So is that's it for news this week?
Yeah, it was hella dope news, bro.
Hella dope news, bro.
Our
featured guest... is probably waiting for us, but I'm going to do a quick intro for them. So our featured guest for this week is Harley Small. Originally conceived as a solo project, Harley Small has become a full-fledged band with a brand new single released in November 2018. Harley himself is a sound engineer for the Space Studios and is an exciting and imaginative songwriter, painting with a broad sonic palette on his debut release, Cassettes from the New Millennium, which came out last year. Before Harley and company join us in the studio, take a listen to the band's latest single. This is Friends.
Like I'm seeing, 'cause I got
if you want to. And we're back. You're listening to Pacific Sound Radio. That was the latest single by our first featured guest for this episode, Harley Small. So let's do a quick round of introductions for our listeners. What's your name and what do you play?
I'm Harley Small. I sing and play guitar.
I'm Matt, and I play guitar and noisy stuff.
Noisy stuff. I like it. Mm-hmm. So Harley, when did you start writing and recording your own music?
I started writing when I was probably about 14. I started recording not long after that, just at home in my bedroom.
And what were some of the bands and projects you were involved in before joining or forming Harley Smalls? I guess joining would apply to Matt.
Yeah, I was in a band for a long time called There There. It was, like, kind of embarrassing to look back on now. You know, it was, like, high school band.
I actually think I heard of you guys.
Yeah?
Yeah.
We played a lot for a while. But that was, yeah, that's what I did before this. And then I went to Nimbus in 2013 and started this project around then, I guess. Just sort of started writing new stuff for myself. And then it took a little while to find a band. And, yeah. So now we're just kind of getting things off the ground.
Nice.
Yeah.
And Matt, what projects were you involved in before Harley Small?
A number of projects. I'm still kind of working on my own solo project called Dumb Pop in the singer-songwriter context or
cool.
pop music context. But yeah, I work on a number of projects with dance and theater and community-based arts as well. Yeah.
Good stuff. Sounds like you're all fairly busy. How did the band come together? Because, again, Harley Small started as a solo project but has now become a very active full band with mm-hmm. multiple members.
Yeah. Well, I've been wanting to put a band together for a long time because, like, when I made cassettes, a lot of the songs were sort of meant to be played by a band, but I just didn't have the personnel. So it took probably a full year where I was just, like, trying to find the right people and get it going. And my wife, Sydney, introduced me to Matt, because they had gone to school together. And we had kind of immediately, you know, got along really well and had similar taste. And then Jasper Rinch, our bass player, he is a friend from the community who we played a lot of shows with, so invited him to come and play. He plays bass in Sam Tudor as well. And Matt Horgan is another person from SFU. He's the drummer. And, yeah, it just, like I said, took maybe a year and a half, 2 years to sort of bring everybody together as searching, you know, for the right people.
Yeah, it's always tricky. I mean, for me, with the bands I've played in, it's largely been through Craigslist, and that can be a real roll of the dice sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess in your case, it was all really just organically through friends.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of the better way to go, I'd say.
I hope so. I think so. It's working out so far.
Oh, I'm sure you'll be fine. Harley, you're a sound engineer and member of the recording collective, The Space Studios.
Yep.
How did The Space come together, and what is your role with the team?
So The Space is actually a lot of people from my hometown of White Rock. And they basically built the studio from scratch. It used to just be an empty box, basically, a rehearsal studio. And once they got the studio together, I was interning at Fader Mountain at the time. And Dan Klenner, who's the other engineer and a drummer at The Space, had a session at Fader, and we bumped into each other. And he was like, oh, like, you know, we're trying to get our own studio off the ground, and we're looking for somebody to engineer. And we had known each other because we both grew up in White Rock. And so that's how I got involved. Just total luck, you know, because I knew all the people involved already. And my role there is an engineer and a producer for other bands that come in and want to record. And it's mainly run by a band called the Star Captains. The five of them are basically the people who built the studio and put it all together, and they're a really great band.
I haven't heard of them, but now I guess got to check them out.
Check them out. Yeah, they're like sort of neo soul hip hop kind of stuff. They're really
cool.
Really talented. Yeah.
I like the name too.
Yeah.
I'm just picturing them like jumping around the stage wearing like Star Trek gear. something like
it
that.
It's not like that at all, but you should check them out.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, I mean, that's kind of a genius move. It's just like, oh, well, let's just form our own studio to record our stuff and then bring in other people.
Yeah.
What are some of the bands and artists that you've worked with as a studio engineer and producer?
I've worked with quite a lot of people in Vancouver at this point. The biggest one probably now would be Peach Pit. I recorded and produced both their records that they put out so far. And they just got signed to Columbia Records, maybe 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Other than that, I helped track all the drums for the last Sam Tudor album.
Is that Quixotic Dreams?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. That record's great.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a great songwriter and a good musician. So that was a lot of fun to help out with as well. And yeah, there's so many others. It's hard to mention everybody. Sarah Jickling, she's another one, an old friend from White Rock again, and she's doing really well now too. We did her last album at The Space, and we're working on another one right now.
Good stuff. What would you say has been the most memorable project that you've worked on so far?
That's tough. There have been so many good ones, but. I mean, I feel like I have to say Peach Pit just because nobody expects something to blow up like that. You know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's probably feels pretty good
on
your end. I mean, they're a talented band in their own right, but being able to have a hand in that band's success. I mean, we had Lester Lyons Hookham, the music video director, on the show a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Kind of similar thing. It's like, oh, we're angling to have them on the show at some point.
Yeah. Well, I'll put in a good word if I ever see them.
Yeah, wherever they are, because they must be in...
They're constantly busy.
Either in Europe or Asia right now, I think.
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, they're coming back on the 22nd.
Yeah, so...
Somehow playing the Wise Hall. That's going to sell out. Not the Wise Hall, sorry. Russian Hall? I have no idea where the Kingfisher Blues Christmas party is, but...
Oh, yeah. Russian Hall?
I think it's Russian Hall.
Russian Hall, okay. Yeah, that's... Not going to be able to move in the Russian Hall, that's for sure.
Yeah.
What would you say sets The Space apart from other studios in the city?
I think, firstly, it's run by artists and musicians, which is just super valuable. Like, everybody at The Space just, knows how to get the right vibe because they've all been in situations where, things aren't going right and, the studio doesn't understand what you want and you're spending a ton of money because so I don't know, everybody at The Space just knows how to get the right vibe, and I would say that's the biggest strength and the thing that sets The Space apart from other studios.
And would you say you guys are kind of more artist friendly in terms of, I mean, obviously you got to get paid for your work, but would you say you're more artist friendly in terms of understanding the limited resources at band's disposal?
Absolutely. Yeah. We do a lot of pretty low budget projects. And we're always willing to, make things work for the artists. Cause like I just said, everybody understands what that's like. Right. So.
Yeah. And I don't know, it kind of speaks to what you've been able to do that, you recorded with Peach Pit. Mm-hmm. At The Space.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're the probably one of the biggest bands to come out of Vancouver in the last 5 years. So
yeah it was super low budget, but it worked out.
I mean, that's part of the, I guess, part of the appeal.
Yep.
I suppose it's one way to put it, kind of similar to the Young Heezy thing, the fact that he's taken off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of want to talk about your first record for a little bit. You released your debut LP, Cassettes from the New Millennium, in 2017, and you wrote and recorded that as a solo endeavor. Yep. The record draws from a variety of styles, ranging from synth pop to noise rock to folk. What was the writing process like for this release?
It was kind of weird because some of the songs I had for a long time, just kicking around. Stuff that I knew I wanted to release at some point, but there had just been no way for me to do that, I guess. So I had maybe half the album of that stuff, and then the rest of it, it was sort of a weird transition in my life because I was moving out for the first time and I was living like by myself basically in the home that my sister and I grew up in White Rock. But she'd already moved out and my parents had moved out. So it was literally just like an empty house for a couple months, and I spent that time writing the rest of the album and recording the whole thing, which really contributed to the way that the record sounds, because I was recording in the house had hardwood floors and it's just big empty rooms, right? So it's a lot of like natural reverb on the album from that. Yeah, and it also really influenced the writing process, just being totally secluded, you know, and like sort of going through memories of the home and stuff.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of, you have two music videos, but the one live video I have in mind, it's you playing piano. What song is that for that again?
Individual Kings.
Individual Kings. Yeah. So I guess with that video, would you say there's a connection there between how you wrote and recorded that record and I guess the appearance of the video? Because it's you solitary in like a warehouse, it looks like, mm-hmm. playing on some sort of keyboard.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, I wanted to find a way to make some interesting live arrangements for the songs on the album. That was the only one that I ended up getting around to actually filming and releasing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fun to just sort of take songs that, you know, were constructed on the album with a full band, even though I played everything. It's a full band arrangement.
Yeah.
And then to take that and turn it into a similar arrangement, but just solo, and do as much as you can just by yourself. It was a fun process.
Definitely. While working on the record, were there any home studio musicians that served as a source of inspiration for you? I mean, Kevin Parker from Tame Impala comes
absolutely,
to mind.
Yeah.
Ruben Nielsen from Unknown Mortal Orchestra.
Absolutely, yeah. Both of those guys, huge influences, for sure. Yeah, I'm also a big fan of bands that, even if they didn't record it in their home, their records sound very handmade. You
mm-hmm.
know, it's like sometimes people spend a ton of money to like go into a studio and everything, but they want the end result to sort of sound like it was recorded in somebody's bedroom, anyways.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like I really like that aesthetic, and I just like that sound a lot. So. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, Kevin Parker, he was a huge influence for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that guy pretty much has like a professional studio in his house at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's funny you mention that because like I'd say probably my favorite pair of Wilco records are the ones that sound the most, even though, you know, they were recorded with professional equipment, they sound very handmade. Yankee Hotel Foxtrot and Star Wars.
Absolutely,
specifically.
Yeah. Those are both great records.
Yeah.
Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, that's another, yeah, huge influence in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though that record was, of course, recorded in a professional studio, it doesn't sound like it at all.
No, yeah. Yeah, like you said, it's got that handmade quality,
yeah.
right?
Have you seen the documentary about that record?
I have.
Yeah.
I think the one where there's like some tension with one of his band members as well, right?
Yeah,
like,
the fellow, I can't remember his name, but he wound up quitting the band and unfortunately died of a drug overdose.
Yes, I did see that documentary. It was really good.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah.
And I love it when they were filming that while they were making the record, then it winds up being like their most mm-hmm. enduring record
absolutely,
to date.
Yeah,
it's just like it's
classic.
Just perfect.
Yeah. Totally. Super interesting story behind that.
It's like how there's early footage. There's like footage, pro shot footage of like the first couple of gigs by The Who. It's like, how
Jay
did they
Bennett.
Know? Yeah. Jay Bennett, yes. Was that the fellow who?
According to Jaden.
Okay,
Bennett,
Jay Bennett was the fellow who passed away.
Our producer just texted in.
Yes. Jaden's a Wilco fan as well.
Nice. Yeah.
So we got updates, live updates. Thank you, Jaden.
You're our number one fan.
What would on the record? What would you say was the most challenging song to compose and record?
I would probably say Individual Kings, actually. And looking back now, it's also probably my least favorite on the album. I spent a long time trying to figure out what direction I wanted to go with it, and it's also the cleanest sounding song on the album. It's the most like studio sounding song, and in retrospect, I mean, I stand by everything that I make, but that I wish that I had maybe made it sound a bit more like the rest of the album, you know? Just dirtied it up a little bit more.
Yeah, no, fair. I mean, it's funny that you mentioned that as like, oh, it's the most clean-sounding song, but you have a folk number. I think it's the second-to-last song. The track list names are escaping me.
Today's Plans. Yeah.
I mean, that song sounds a little prettier to me, but maybe that's just my ears.
That's true. It is a pretty song, but I think the vocals and the production is still kind of dirty. Like, I recorded all the vocals, like, through a bunch of distortion and, like, weird reverb and stuff, and, like, yeah. From my perspective, it's the production on that one's still not, like, super clean, tight, like, studio production. You know, it still feels more like that weird, like, bedroom indie kind of thing.
Yeah, fair enough. I guess, kind of flip it another way, what's your favorite song from the album?
Probably ZAD or What Could Go Wrong. Yeah.
Those are both really solid. I like those a lot. It was weird, I was listening to those, and this record came out before the next record I'm going to talk about was released, but I was listening to cassettes for the first time, and I was listening to ZAD, and I'm like, oh man, this reminds me of the new MGMT record that just came out.
Sweet.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Have you heard that record?
I've heard bits and pieces of it, but I haven't actually sat down and listened to the whole thing yet.
I'd recommend listening to it all the way through. I'm not a huge MGMT guy, but I'd say it's probably their strongest release since Oracular Spectacular.
Sweet. Yeah, I will definitely check it out. It's been on my list for a while. Yeah. I haven't gotten around to it yet.
Yeah, I'd say it's one of the... I'm surprised by how much I liked it, because, again, not a huge MGMT guy, but it's on my short list for international releases for this year, for sure.
Nice. Yeah, I will check it out.
So the band has released a new single, marking the recording debut of the Harley Small band called Friends, which we just played on the show, earlier. Is this song an indication of the musical direction you're looking to take this project on your next EP or LP?
I think actually this song's maybe a little bit of a red herring, because, it is quite a bit different than what the rest of the songs that we're currently working on sound like. I wanted to, during the writing process of that one, I wanted to just write, like, a super catchy, immediate, like, pop song just to, like, hook people, you know? Then with the band, we, kind of made it as weird as we could while still maintaining that. You have anything you want to?
Yeah, please. No? Let's get some input from Matt.
About Friends?
Yeah.
I mean, we did our best with the weirdness, but on the weird factor, it's not as weird as any of the other stuff we've been recording in the studio lately. So, and also what we do live, I think, it expands that sonic vocabulary a little bit as well. Yeah.
Cool. I mean, I kind of like how the first thing I ever heard from you guys was Friends, and then I went back and listened to cassettes, and I was like, oh, this is really different. Mm-hmm. So that's actually really cool that Friends is a bit of a red herring, because that makes me very excited to hear what you're going to be up to on the next release. Have you started writing and recording any of that material?
Yep, we're in the process. We're trying to get a whole record done, but we want to, in the age of streaming, you know, just kind of release like one song at a time and like, see how it goes.
Yeah.
And then once it's all said and done, there'll be an album at the end of it all, you know? But we've got about half the record done at this point, and right now just in the process of getting funding and figuring out, you know, all the logistics of getting it finished and releasing it.
Yeah, all the fun mixing and mastering costs and that.
Exactly, yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah.
How long, because I'm trying to get nailed down the timeline here, how long has the Harley Small Band been playing together, and what has the response been like from your fans and colleagues in the scene to your full live band?
Yeah, the response so far has been really good, which is nice. It's also nice to just be playing shows again, because there was a while there, like, with cassettes, I didn't really play shows at all. I played a couple, but I just couldn't really get things to come across the way I wanted them to by myself. So it's really nice to have a band now, and we've been playing together for, like, maybe a couple of years.
Yeah, about 2 years.
So I feel like we're just starting to hit, like, the critical mass, you know, of, like, oh, okay, we practiced enough. Like, we're actually, we're actually getting kind of tight now, you know?
Always a good feeling.
Yeah.
Let's see. How have you... Oh, yeah, and kind of a... Because I haven't had the pleasure of seeing you guys live yet, but I intend to. How have you been able to translate the largely electronic-based music from cassettes from the new millennium into a live setting?
Well, luckily, Matt here is a brilliant guitarist, and he's able to make some crazy fucking sounds. I'm sorry.
You're allowed to swear. You're allowed to swear.
Okay,
don't worry.
Great, great.
Yeah.
He makes some crazy sounds that, you know, that I was trying to make as well on cassettes, and he's managed to translate that really well. And the rest of the electronic stuff, like, we're all, like, super into gear, and so everybody's always playing with different pedals and, like, weird synths and stuff. So it actually hasn't been as much of a challenge as I thought it would be. But, yeah, maybe Matt can talk about his...
Yeah, what you got on your board, Matt?
What do I have on my... Oh, man, everyone who knows about gear will know how, like, basic my board is. I just have, like, basic tools on my board, so things to lower pitches and tremolos and different delays routed through other delays and some big distortions. But it's mostly how I play the guitar. Sometimes I'll use my pickups as a way to... hear audio from a cassette player to then use that to process and make other weird sounds while, like, you know, using echo pedals, you know, frequencies to make it sound more like a vocoder or something with some delay at the end. You know, weird things like that to help make a track have a little bit more texture, or even just playing with different objects on the guitar live really helps, you know, get a different kind of sound on the instrument.
So are we talking violin bows or more power drills?
Oh, I don't have any power drills. I do have a bow. I haven't used any of Harley's music. I generally a lot of, like, metal objects and slides and things.
Yeah.
Or also just, you know, aggressive playing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That works, too. But, yeah, that's kind of what I've been doing. And it's been fun working with the bassist Jasper on doing different noise textures, because he has a pretty little nice setup going on with his bass stuff that I think we've found a way to have a nice... weird conversation with our little pedals there. So
yeah, that's just it. Is if you can find a way for the bass to, like, perfectly complement what the guitars are doing, then you're in the clear.
Yeah, Jasper's green. He's a great bass player, so it makes it easy.
For sure. Let's see. What would you say has been your most memorable show to date?
Fox?
Or Fox was pretty cool. That was pretty crazy.
Yeah. Or yeah, a couple weeks ago we played a show at the Toast, which was really fun, because it was the first time we had sold out our own show.
Nice.
It was packed, and we, like, organized the whole thing and, like, set it all up, which, yeah, it was the first time that's happened for us, so that was super memorable. And then about, I guess, like, the summer of 2017, we played at the Fox. We opened up for Peach Pit. And that was super memorable because they sold out the Fox, and we got to play to that crowd, which was super cool.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because you don't get to do that very often.
No.
So, yeah, those are probably the two memorable ones right now.
Got to say, I'm a little jealous about being able to play a sold-out show at the Fox. It's probably one of my dreams right now with my band. So.
It's pretty memorable, yeah.
That's great. Let's see. Besides, obviously, releasing some new material next year. What are your plans for 2019? Are you looking to do some touring, get out of Vancouver, or what you got in mind?
Yeah, absolutely. We've been talking about touring for a long time, and I think next year will probably be the year that we finally do it. Yeah, we want to put out a few more songs and, you know, start promoting the next album, and then hopefully next summer, like, just play as many festivals and, like, tour. We'd ideally like to do, like, a West Coast tour down to the States, if we can get that organized. And we'd like to do an across Canada tour as well, but that's, you know, a little more ambitious as far as the travel goes. Yeah.
Got to be strategic with those across Canada tours, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Good stuff. What is, and this applies to both of you, what is your favorite local release of 2018?
Oh boy.
Oh, man.
You can rattle off a few if it makes it easier.
I'm gonna. Number one for me, I think, is probably got to be Sam Tudor's album. I just love his songwriting and singing. How about you, Matt?
I'd probably have to echo that because I think Sam's a really great writer. But also, his bassist, Jasper, who plays with us, released a record called Dil Brito. It's pretty sweet. It's pretty sweet as well, I'd say.
Yeah. And second after that, I would say Walgren, her album. And it's funny, I feel like everybody is somehow like 2 degrees separated from Sam Tudor, because Walgren also plays in Sam Tudor's band, and so does Jasper, but they're all making great music, so.
6 degrees of Sam Tudor. Get out of here, Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's awesome. The Sam Tudor record's great. There's been a lot of excellent releases that have come out this year. We've got our best of episode planned for the last week of December, just before the new year, and it's going to be very hard to cover even all of it.
There's been a lot of great stuff.
A lot
year.
Of good stuff.
Yeah.
Are there any local bands or artists that you'd recommend we bring on the show for a future episode?
Have you guys had Justice McClellan on here?
Yes, from Blue Jay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he also played the Snug Concert Series.
Okay.
Video is available on YouTube.
Well, there you go. You're already a step ahead. Mm-hmm. Hey, that would be my suggestion.
That EP is excellent. That's one of my favorite releases of the year, for sure.
Yeah, that's another great one.
Yeah.
Also, his shirts are really comfortable. I'm actually wearing a
Blue Jay shirt right now underneath my sweater.
Nice.
Beautiful.
There we go.
I'm not sure. I'm trying to think of people that maybe you haven't had on here.
Well, we haven't had Sam Tudor on the show, so
you haven't? Okay, well, you should have him on here for
Sam
sure.
On.
Yeah.
I think he'd be good for the Snug as well, considering kind of the folky, freak folky vibes of his music.
Definitely.
Yeah. Anyone else come to mind?
I mean, have you had Walgren on?
Not yet.
Well, there's another one.
There you go.
You can have her on,
Yes.
Perfect. So how can listeners check out your music and keep up with everything Harley Small is up to?
The best two ways are probably Instagram and Facebook. I use Twitter as well, but Twitter is more like kind of a joke. I just sort of like say whatever random things come into my head.
Yeah.
Instagram is probably the best way.
For sure. Is that just at Harley Small?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
That makes it very easy. And all your music's on Spotify, Apple Music.
Yep, pretty much. Yeah,
all the streaming
all
platforms.
The big ones. Yep,
good
and
stuff.
Bandcamp. Yeah,
love me some Bandcamp. Getting ahead of myself here. That's fantastic. I love cassettes. I love the new single. I can't wait to hear what you guys get up to in 2019. And let me know when your next show is, because I'd love to see you guys.
I will, for sure. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks.
Before we're joined by our second guest, check out this track from Harley Small's debut release, Cassettes from the New Millennium. This is What Could Go Wrong. And we're back. You're listening to Pacific Sound Radio. That was What Could Go Wrong by Harley Small. Be sure to check out. Yeah, they were great. Be sure to check out Cassettes from the New Millennium, available on Spotify, Apple Music, and wherever you stream your tunes. So our second featured guest for this week's episode is Sam Lynch. Sam is an emerging alt-folk artist who has spent the majority of this year touring Canada to promote her debut EP, Lights and Lines, released in May of 2018. Before we get into our conversation with Sam, here is the first song off of Lights and Lines. This is 2 Feet.
To dance my way right out the door. I haven't seen you in years. I fear it's best we left it that way. With you it's always the same. With 2 feet planted for me, I'm truly feeling gravity. Walk in the room. Wait, you were too halfway when I watch your eyes float to the ceiling and I sink inside. Oh, with you it's always. Thought that I'd acted so carelessly back when you were at my feet. You caught my hand and you held me too close. A guarded man, an abandoned post, dancing toe to toe again. Eyes closed, I know you see me. I inhale and exhale you so deeply. You say you always needed me the most. And with me it's so easy. And with you it's so easy. Almost quarter four, I make the call, I grab my keys, I head out the door.
And we're back. You're listening to Pacific Sound Radio. That was 2 Feet by our second featured guest for this episode, Sam Lynch, who's just joined us in the studio. How's your day going, Sam?
It's wet.
It is.
Yeah.
But at least it's not snowing.
This is true.
I wish it was snowing.
I don't. I don't have winter tires on my car.
I don't drive, so.
Well, you're lucky, I guess.
Yeah, train don't care.
I sometimes need my car, Travis. I have family that doesn't live in the city, and the transit system is lacking.
Yep.
Hi, Sam.
Do you guys need a moment?
We're good. We're done.
I think we need a moment to
stop. But other than the weather, how's your day been?
Yeah, it's really good. I bought a Christmas tree today, so
oh,
that
fantastic.
Was really exciting. And
where'd you go?
To a little lot in Burnaby that's hosted by Aunt Leah's. nice. Which is very cool.
Yeah.
So they have a bunch of them around town, and all the proceeds go to help kids that are in the foster care system. And that's where I went.
Good. Very cool. I got a treat from them, too.
Awesome.
Different place, but
great.
Today is brought to you by Aunt Leah.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
And trees.
Thanks.
Thanks, trees.
Douglas fir or what? What type?
It is a Douglas fir. That's
I think
exactly right.
Douglas fir is usually what people go for.
Yes. Yeah. Palm no, it's nice. My weird. House smells so nice.
I know. Yeah. I wish we could have a tree in my spot, my basement suite, but we don't have room.
For what it's worth, mine's like 3 feet tall.
Oh, fair.
And it's
okay.
Like on our coffee table in the corner of the living room. Mm. And it really adds a little something-something, you know?
Yeah. Adds the magic.
Yeah.
When did you realize that you wanted to write and perform your own music?
I thought you were going to
ask about Christmas. Let's just jump right in.
I was just going to, yeah, I don't know. I was thinking of a transition, but I couldn't think of one. Sorry.
I respect that. I respect that. When did I? Well, I don't really know. I think, you know, I started writing and singing songs when I was pretty young, but it was never really like an intentional thing. It was just a way for me to immediately process my emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of, I guess, how it all sort of started. And then it wasn't really until, I guess, like 2.5-3 years ago now that I really started taking it a little bit more seriously and kind of moving past those like the immediacy of the feelings that I was barfing out into song and started to kind of look at the songs that I was writing with a little bit more of a critical eye. And so I took a pretty long hiatus from music while I was going to university, and even through high school I kind of was quite distant from it. So it's just been a lot of kind of relearning and like sort of trying to get comfortable with it all again.
For sure. I mean, there isn't, I wrote lyrics, but I never had songs for them back in high school.
Yeah.
And I hope I've burned all those lyrics or at least destroyed them because I never want to read any of them ever again.
It can be pretty shocking.
The cringe is pretty intense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's like, ooh. Oh, dear.
Lots of feelings.
Yeah. And I get what you mean in terms of like, okay, if you're going to do like the serious, like I'm a singer-songwriter, a lot of editing involved.
Yeah, totally. I mean, not always, but I think you just kind of, you start to look at things a little bit differently.
And how long would you say you've been performing live? Especially if you've, you know, in the last 2 to 3 years, you've been seriously pursuing the solo thing.
I mean, like, there's kind of like this big kind of blackout period where I wasn't doing really anything musical at all. So it's kind of tricky because like when I was kind of like grade 8 to 10, I remember I would like go to open mics, and I lived in Surrey, and there was an open mic that a friend had told me about that was in White Rock. So I remember my mom would drive with me down to White Rock, and it was nice because I never knew anybody because it was kind of out of my hood. So I would run away to White Rock and sing some cover songs. I don't know. And then it wasn't really. Yeah, I just kind of dabbled in. Yeah, just like the open mic scene. I lived in Victoria for 6 years, so would like once in a blue moon. If, like, I had had a couple beers and my friends had peer pressured me into it, then I'd, you know, find myself maybe playing a tune. But it was never really serious. And it wasn't until, I guess, 3 years ago, after I'd graduated university, so I guess not quite even 3 years ago, but I went traveling and I was on my own for about 3.5 months. And it wasn't really until that trip. It sounds super cliched anytime I talk about it, and I'm fully aware of that. The whole, you know, backpacking Europe, find yourself, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. It was something about just kind of clearing my life of everything that had been providing it structure, whether it be a job or a relationship or school or, you know, my family ties or anything like that. I just kind of, like, cut that all back and found myself just kind of wandering around and like feeling pretty lost. And it wasn't really until then that I just started kind of writing songs again. And it was like by cutting everything back away, it like allowed me to kind of get back in touch with that a little bit. So playing live, it didn't really happen until I got back from that trip. And then it was like I had this like stupid stubbornness that was just like, I'm going to write a song and play it in front of humans because that scares the shit out of me. So here we go. And it's only really been the last few years. So I'm a pretty like jump in all the way kind of person, which it's very, you know, sink or swim. And I think I've sunk a few times, more than a few times.
We all sink.
Yeah, totally. But I mean, yeah, no, I don't know. It's just. So I guess to answer your question in a super fucking long-winded way, the last couple years I've been playing live again.
Were there any songs that you wrote while you were on your travels, or at least had the idea for while you were traveling?
No, none that have stuck around.
Okay.
None that I still play. Like, a lot of it was, I think, again, just kind of that, like, the immediacy of it, and like a lot of it was just like I'm feeling like shit, and then I would just write a song and then it would just kind of be gone, you know. I would process the thing and then kind of throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
I think I wrote quite a few songs after that, like reflecting on my experience, and I still do reflect on that experience all the time because it was pretty pivotal for me. So I think I'll probably be writing about that experience in one way or another for quite a long time, but yeah, I don't really hang on to any of them.
Yeah, it's probably the more clever way to go about doing it than this time in Amsterdam.
Yeah, totally.
I assume you went to Europe, but...
I did go to Europe.
Oh, there we
go.
You're
exactly right. Yeah.
Who are... Well, actually, which question am I on?
Whichever one you want.
Yeah. You categorize your sound as alt-folk on your social media biography. How do you describe the term alt-folk and your sound in general?
Oh, to be honest, I don't know what the hell I am. Genre is so weird. I don't know. I just write songs. And, you know, considering the fact that the majority of my songs are written on guitar, I play alone most of the time. And in the songs that I've recorded with a slight bit of production, it's kind of landed me in that category.
Mm-hmm.
Just based off of, you know, the keys that I play in and the instrumentation that I've chosen and things like that. But I don't know, I don't really love the idea of like of being classified as an artist within a genre. I don't know, like it's hard. I don't know. So alt folk to me is just kind of like, alt is a bit of a cheater term to like toss on the front of anything to like give you more freedom in my opinion, at least that's how I kind of see it. So, yeah, I don't know. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I'd say so. I was kind of expecting a response like that because,
sure.
Yeah, it genre's genre.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some cases where if you're a country artist, you can't get away with calling yourself a rap crew.
Sure,
but
yeah.
When it comes to the nitty-gritty definitions, unless you're playing in metal, it's not really that important.
Totally. Yeah. And I think it's kind of like the blessing and the curse of like where we're at right now in like the global sphere of music is we have access to everything at any given moment. And I think that allows artists to be a little bit more free with the way that they're writing their songs and producing their songs and presenting them because, you know, you can kind of be anything at any moment. And I think there's tons of artists who are crossing over really effectively. And I don't think people are as, like, you know, against it anymore. Because, you know, you can toss on a Spotify playlist or whatever. And at any given moment, you're hearing many, many genres at any time. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I'd say that's kind of the best thing about the internet changing everything when it comes to how people consume music is I think people are more... There's less... siloing going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's less people who are like, I only listen to this style of music because I'm this type of
person.
Absolutely.
That's happening less and less, I find.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
In fact, like, it's not even considered the norm anymore to be one of those
genre.
People who are like, I only listen to metal or I only listen to rap. And it's like, well,
totally.
You don't have to be that way, and a lot of people aren't that way anymore.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. Who are some of the songwriters that have served as a source of inspiration to you?
Man, that question comes up all the time, and every time I'm asked it, I'm like, shit, I should have prepared something. But I don't know. It really changes all the time. I think I go back to the artists that I listened to a lot when I was growing up. I guess kind of by default because of what my parents had on. So, I think I was influenced a lot by like Fleetwood Mac and, you know, Paul Simon and that kind of vibe. In terms of like songwriters now that I feel like I'm learning about new ones all the time. I really love like Angel Olsen. I really love, Sharon Van Etten is incredible. Andy Schoaf is incredible. I've recently kind of, even though it's not typically the type of music that I enjoy listening to as a songwriter, I think Kacey Musgraves is putting out some really, really great pop music. I feel like I could sit here and name drop for like hours because there's so many people that are writing really great stuff. So,
oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in every genre.
Yeah. It can kind of be a little bit overwhelming.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thought I had a follow-up comment there, but I don't.
I think Vancouver is really pumping out some incredible songwriters right now.
Definitely.
As well. Like, I mean, I don't know if he... I know he's been kind of back and forth between here and Toronto, but Sam Tudor writes incredible songs.
We've been talking about Sam Tudor quite a bit on the show.
He's a monster. He's so good. So I really love his music and... I don't know. That's one that always is kind of top of mind for me.
Oh, no, Sam's great. Harley Small, who we just had on our first hour, their bassist also plays in Sam Tudor's band.
Mm. Right on.
And I need to listen to Quixotic Dreams more because, man, it's going to be tough for us to do our best of 2018 episode because a lot of great material came out.
Yeah.
On the topic of excellent local songwriters. Mm. Have you heard Quinn Pickering?
No, I haven't.
So we had him on the show for episode 40 something a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
He's quite young. I think he's turning 19.
Right on.
But he writes with the self-assuredness of a artist in their 30s.
Mm.
Like he's a very polished songwriter, and it's really incredible to see.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'll check him out for sure.
Yeah, I'm excited to see where he's going to be in 5 years' time.
Yeah,
as he's starting strong.
Yeah.
I'd recommend, he's got an album called Baby Blue.
I will look into it.
Yeah. Give it a spin.
Yeah, for sure.
On your streaming platform. What are some of the themes and topics you cover in your lyrics?
If I'm being honest, it's usually almost always me talking to myself or picking something apart about myself. I don't know. It's kind of just like my way of like turning a mirror on myself. So a lot of the songs that I'm writing, especially these days, are kind of like noticing habits that I have or tendencies that I have and in my relationships or in my thinking and just kind of reflecting on it. And I don't know. So, yeah, oftentimes it's very introspective and that's kind of my way of processing things. Yeah. I try to write outside of that. And I mean, like, Yeah, I just feel like the things that I hang on to tend to be the things that are closest to me because it feels just the most honest. So,
and I mean, you can write about it in the most direct and honest way. Would you
say? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
We'd love to hear a live song.
Totally.
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you want to play?
What am I going to play?
Yeah.
I will play. Oh, I don't want to stab you with my guitar.
I prefer to not be stabbed today.
Should I just move this guy kind of like?
Oh yeah. So
like
the arm's adjustable. Yeah. What we can do is my mic that I'm speaking into right now. I can move over to your guitar, and
oh,
then if you want to use the mic that's in front of you right now,
that's great
for your voice.
Okay, perfect. I can do that. Okay, this one I'll put right here. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
I'll move it over once we find out what song you're going to play.
Oh, right. You're waiting on me. Cool. I think I'll play a song. It's kind of one of the first... Well, it is the first song that I kind of released to the interwebs. It's called Mess You Made. So I'll play that one.
Cool stuff. Sam Lynch, live on Pacific Sound Radio.
Sit at the table and still refuse to eat. Keep our hands filled with pitchforks to use as cutlery. I don't want to fight with you, but the words you say aren't true. I'll paper up these walls. Well, moments turn into years. I'm always waiting on your call. This house ever feel like home, dear? I don't wanna fight anymore. But you're breaking through and you're slamming doors, and now I'm cleaning up the mess you made. I'm just cleaning up the mess that you made. You can just keep on walking and call it a parade while I'm cleaning up the mess you made. Till I find my spot, but I'm falling over my feet and all my messy thoughts. I don't wanna fight anymore. Now I can't get off the goddamn floor. No, I'm just cleaning up the mess you made. I'm just cleaning.
Listening to Pacific Sound Radio. That was Sam Lynch live in the studio with a rendition of Mess You Made. Off of your first EP titled Lights and Lines, which you released in May of 2018. Now that's a short release featuring only three songs. What was the decision-making process behind recording and releasing only three specific songs?
I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, they were the only three that felt ready. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of touring around that time and like leading up to that release. So in the winter of the previous year of 2017, and so I was playing a lot of different songs and I was trying certain songs a lot of different ways, and none of them just felt like they had fully found their feet. So I don't know. I wanted to release things that I felt really good about and songs that felt like they were ready. I don't know. I try my best not to be in a huge rush. That really goes against the larger part of my personality. That's like very push, 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 go, go, go.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, at the end of the day, like, this is a catalog that in theory could stand longer than I do. So, you know, I just want to put out things that I'm proud of and that feel ready.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally get behind that. I mean, a lot of creative projects, I feel there's a lot of hurry up and wait in
100%.
Terms of,
yeah.
My band was, doing a live video shoot yesterday. Mm-hmm. Took all day. We didn't start filming until like halfway through the day.
Yep.
So, because you got to make sure it sounds very right first.
Stop. Yep. Wait. Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, you want to put out something that you're proud of. I always find it strange when bands and artists release every song in a session on an album, and I'm like, what? Perhaps make for a better EP or maybe a better single album as opposed to a double album.
Yeah, for sure. I hear you.
Yeah. Being an editor, your own editor,
mm-hmm.
it's a good move.
Mm-hmm.
Luca Fagali,
yeah,
did I pronounce that right? Mm-hmm. Produced, engineered, and mixed Lights and Lines.
Mm-hmm.
Luca is a talented local artist in his own right. How did you get connected with him, and what was it like working on this project together?
We had met, I guess, about a year and a half prior to that, just at a music event. In my mind, it was just kind of the obvious choice. He knew the songs really well, anyway. And so I think that there's lots to be said about that, about like finding somebody who you can trust and who, you know, I felt like he knew the songs, kind of as good as anybody could, having not written them themselves. So, it just felt like a really good fit, and I trust him as a person and as a creative individual. So, yeah, it just felt like the right fit. So it was a great experience working with him. Yeah,
sounds like it.
Yeah.
Did you have the chance to collaborate with Luca on songwriting for Lights and Lines, or
no?
Okay.
The songs were already written. It was a lot of like. You know, I mean, the songs are pretty simple, and the production, we didn't go too crazy with it. But it was a lot of, I mean, every decision that we made was a joint one, we were both on board for. So it was a lot. It just, you know, the three songs took under a week, and we just kind of sat in the studio and went through song by song and figured out, you know, what do we need? And then we brought, you know, some of my really good friends in to play some specific parts. And Zach Klissinger played lap steel that we ended up using on a couple of the songs. And then my good friend Laura Resnick played violin. So we were able to take their parts and also kind of manipulate them and kind of repurpose them in other ways in the songs as well. So, yeah, I mean, production-wise, like, every decision was, like, very much both myself and him. So, but yeah, the songs were already done.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Would you consider collaborating with another artist at some point?
Yeah, totally. yeah, actually in the last year I've tried my hand at co-writing, which has been a totally new process for me, and tricky at times, and it's kind of stretched a different part of my brain that I'm just not used to stretching when it comes to songwriting, because, you know, as I mentioned, it's for me like very much a way to process my feelings and my emotions. So I feel like stepping into a song or a co-writing situation, you need to be acutely aware of that. If that's indeed, you know, what you do when you're songwriting, because I think it can be really easy to get precious about things. And I think that's the number one thing that I've learned in co-writes and when you're collaborating with people is remembering kind of what your goal is. You know, and ideally your goal is to just make the best thing that you possibly can. And then I think it just requires a lot of, not necessarily compromising, but, you know, bending and, you know, ebbs and flows and hopefully finding a solution that everybody's on board with.
Yeah, being flexible but not uncompromising. Or compromising?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, maybe compromising is the right word.
Yeah.
But to me, I don't know. Compromising is like each person is not quite exactly getting what they want, so they're like hitting, you know, a few notches off to like find a middle ground. And mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think that that's what you want to do. I think that the better way of thinking of it is, you know, finding a middle ground that both people are really happy with, authentically happy with. So, which can be harder said than done. Yeah.
Who are some of the artists that you've been co-writing with?
I've done some co-writes with Ryan Gildemond of Mother Mother, which has been awesome.
Oh, wow.
Actually, he's been kind of like one that has been really wonderful.
That guy knows how to write a song.
Yeah,
or two.
Sure does. He sure does. Yeah, no, he's pretty awesome. Noah Dirksen, I did a couple co-writes with. He's incredible. He's based out of Winnipeg, I believe, but he's, you know, whenever he's in town. Katrina, I actually can't remember her last name, but Katrina from the Bell Game. I've done a couple with her. That's kind of off the top of my head some of the ones that I've
done. It's a good mix.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think that's kind of like the goal is to write with people who maybe access parts of the songwriting process that you wouldn't naturally access yourself. So, yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Especially a guy like Ryan and Katrina from the Bell Game.
Yeah, totally.
Certainly a different approach than what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Lights and Lines, you know, has a very sparse, immediate sound. Mm-hmm. Were you inspired by any specific folk records while working on this EP?
I don't think I was, like, specifically, like, locked in on one project. I know that I was listening to a lot of different things, you know, as I always am. But I think actually when I was away, so I was on tour with Laura Resnick and Alexandria Mayo in the winter of 2017. And we listened to a lot of Lee Follebecq. His most recent release, Twin Solitude, is probably one of my favorite records released in the past decade at least. So I listened to a lot of that, and I think that record really exemplifies like the power of sparseness and like the immediacy of recording live off the floor, and so that was something that I really was inspired by, because it's super intimidating, you know, the thought of capturing things and then just keeping them, you know, because it's so easy to go over things over and over and over and with a fine tooth comb and making sure everything is like exactly right. And so that was something that like I pushed myself to try not to do with this, because they were songs that I had been playing a lot when I had been touring over the past year, and so I tried to just kind of like honor them as they were. And so I didn't really want to decorate them too much. It just didn't feel right for like where I was at, you know, like I had just been playing songs playing shows by myself, just me and a guitar. So it just didn't quite feel right for me to like put out a full album of this like heavily produced stuff.
Hire a 32-piece string orchestra.
It just didn't.
I mean, there
feel
are
like,
some strings on it, but
yeah, there are. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, you know, like it just didn't. I was like, you know, okay, if that happens down the road, then like absolutely, and I hope you know to do that. But I was very aware of like, okay, but this is where I am right now, and I think it's important to like kind of honor each step as you move through it. Again, something that's like not inherent in me, but something that I'm trying really hard to do through this whole thing, because I hope to be playing music for a really, really long time. You know, so I think it's like it's important to kind of like poke your head up above the water every once in a while and like recognize where you are and just kind of like be appreciative of that. So I guess that was like the thought behind it. Yeah, the vocals and the guitar were both recorded live off the floor prior to me leaving on tour. And I actually, I just printed out like CD sleeves, when I landed in Denmark and just had download codes in these like paper CD sleeves that I was selling as my merch of just the live off the floor, recordings. And then it wasn't until I got home from that tour that we then took those live off the floor recordings and did a little bit of production over top of them. So yeah, I kind of tried to double up on.
I like the image of a digipack sleeves like, oh, no CD, here's download code.
Yeah,
it's so modern.
I felt kind of bad, but like Laura and Alexandria, who I was touring with, they both had these beautiful CDs, you know, these records that they had, like, you know, and I felt like such a fraud with my like cardboard bullshit. But
I guess maybe only feel bad if you outsold them, but
no, that was never the case. But no, yeah,
CDs are an interesting thing. I think in terms of physical media, it's like if you have the money for vinyl, go for that. But
totally, yeah.
And this is coming from Mr. Walkman in high school. Mr. I'm going to destroy my jean pocket pants with my Discman just rammed in there.
Totally, yeah.
Took me a while. I didn't even have a cell phone until I went to college.
I'm with you. Yeah. I was 21 until that's a lie. Until I had a smartphone. Prior to that, it was like the old school, like I don't even remember what they're called, but they're like this thick and the flip phone. Yeah, the brick flip phone vibe. Mm. Yeah, and then I had an iPhone. Yeah, I was 20 and I had an iPhone for a few years, and then after I graduated, I resorted back to the flip phone for a solid year. It was quite refreshing. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
I had a MP3 two. I didn't jump on the Apple train. I had like a pair of MP3 players, which were great until they started not working, and I knew they stopped working properly when they started screaming at me.
Uh-oh.
At song.
Oh,
like,
no.
Just interference right in your ear. You're
not good.
Bopping along, and then it's just
not ideal.
Yeah, and then I got a smartphone, and then music's on there.
Yeah, right on.
Joys of modern technology. have you already started work on your next release, and do you have any idea of what direction you want to take your music?
I'm right in the thick of preparation for recording. I'm going to be recording in February, in Montreal, which I'm super excited about and very nervous about and all those things. This is, I guess, kind of like, me stepping into my first official record creation process, kind of from start to finish. So, already it's been like a totally different world. In terms of what direction I want to take, I think that like slow, sad music will always kind of be my comfort zone. But that being said, especially playing live, I've realized that what I enjoy most from a live performance is dynamic. And so that's been something that I've been really conscious of lately, and in building my live sets and, you know, kind of deciding what songs I want to record and therefore what songs I'm going to be playing, you know, in the next coming year or 2 years, is just dynamic. And so trying to be cognizant of tempo and of instrumentation and and making it so it's a journey, you know, because I think that that's at least any albums that have, you know, really, really moved me and have really stuck with me. There's a journey that you go through with that, with the artist. Yeah. So a lot to still be discovered, and I'm really excited to play with some like ridiculously talented session musicians in Montreal. So I'm really excited to collaborate with those people and see kind of what comes from that.
Do you know what studio you'll be working at and what producer you'll be working with?
Yeah. So, I'm going to be working with a producer. His name's Sam Witwicka. He lives in Montreal now. He used to live in Vancouver. He's originally from the Comox Valley. Yeah, and I've had friends who've recorded with him. He's an incredible engineer and producer, so I'm really excited to work with him. At this point, we have studio time booked at Mix Art Studio in Montreal. So we'll be doing the majority of the bed tracks there, and then doing overdubs at various other studios in town. But yeah, that's the plan so far.
Sounds good. Yeah. Is that going to be like a full album, or are you planning on doing another EP?
Full album is the plan. So yeah, looking at between 10 and 12 songs.
It's going to be a good process.
It's going to be something.
Yeah. Looking forward to hearing it.
Yeah.
We'd love to hear another song.
Totally. Yeah. Okay. I guess I'll play a new one. Make sure that I'm
live exclusive.
Yeah, this one I wrote it kind of while I was on I took the Via Rail train. I played music on the Via Rail train last April from Vancouver to Toronto. Which was pretty awesome and like very challenging in ways that I had not expected. Anyway, I kind of wrote it coming off of that experience, but also kind of just like tackling other things in my brain and in my life, but through that lens of feeling a little bit crazy on the train. yeah, so it's called Off the Rails.
Sam Lynch, live on Pacific Sound Radio.
Doctor says, take those pills, you'll be alright. I know that you will. Nothing wrong with guarding the edges of a too sharp mind. You'll be just fine. So I choke them down and I lose my head. The sweet decline and the softened step. Turn my back, but I heard what they said. They said, you sweet, sweet girl, go back to bed. Maybe I'm off the rails, oh, oh. Maybe I'm off the rails, oh, somewhere between here and Montreal, I lost my grip, I lost sight of it all. I slowed myself from a sprint to a crawl, and now my back is pinned against the wall. He talked me down, oh, he told me I was good. He loved me still like I knew that he would. And in the shadows where I once stood, I see light and lines and withered wood. Maybe I'm off the rails. Whoa. be, but don't put me behind the wheel. 'Cause I'm gonna steer us right off the rails. Take those pills, you'll be alright. I know that you will. Nothing wrong with dialing the edges of a too sharp mind. You'll be just fine.
You're listening to Pacific Sound Radio. This is Sam Lynch live in the studio with a rendition of an exclusive new track, Tiled Off the Rails.
That's fun.
You've had a... had the chance to play in a number of countries and regions across the world, including Germany, the Netherlands, and Scandinavia, all through self-booked tours. What has that process entailed for you? I imagine it can be sometimes challenging to make the right connections with booking agents overseas.
Yeah, totally. So I've been on, I guess, three pretty big tours. One was... Western Canada with Cassidy Waring and Emily Rowed. That was a couple years ago now. One was with Alexander Mayo and Laura Resnick in Europe. And then most recently would have been, I guess, Eastern Canada and the U.S., which was by myself. The first two were very much a group effort. The first with Cassidy and Emily, Cassidy did a lot of work. But we all worked really hard to just like the amount of emails that you send is just so overwhelming. But it's like in those situations, especially when there's three people, it's really important to delegate. So, you know, and even just for, clarity of communication, having like one contact person with all the venues is so important. So, Cassidy ended up being that person for that tour, which was incredible. So a lot of just emailing through her, and a lot of Google documents and spreadsheets and all of those things. With Laura and Alexandria, they had both already toured in Europe. So I was incredibly fortunate to be, on that tour with them because I found that I learned a lot. And they already kind of had some existing contacts. One resource that was really incredible was an online platform called Sofa Concerts, based in Europe mostly. And essentially it's an online database where artists and concert hosts can be matched together. Much like something that's started up kind of on our end of the world called Side Door, started by Dan Mangan and one of his partners from, I believe, Nova Scotia. So it's really similar to that in the sense that people who are interested in hosting house shows or more intimate shows in non-conventional spaces can be partnered up with touring artists. So that really was an incredible resource for us, and we were able to visit some places that we would have never gone to if not. And then for my solo one, just a ton of emailing, just so many emails, and a lot of internet creeping. So just going and looking at artists that I see myself aligning with in a career, you know, way, and just kind of, you know, going back and looking through some of their past tours in the same area, and just kind of singling out those venues that might be a good fit for me, because it's really hard if you've never been to these places to know kind of where the scene is and where the good spots are.
Or who the movers and shakers are.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. So just a lot, just like a shocking amount of time on the computer. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God, my brain. Sorry, I was thinking of something, and just like, nope, it's gone. Mm-hmm. What's one piece of advice you'd give to a band or artist that is looking to book their own tour?
I think probably the, looking at other artists' past tours, is really huge. 'Cause I think it can be so daunting when you look at a map and you're like, okay, where the hell am I going to go? 'Cause there's, especially in Canada, touring can be really hard because, our major cities are kind of clustered together. And so there's the prairies where you just drive for 14 hours and see no one. So I think, there's no need to recreate the wheel. You can look and it's not cheating if you, if you look and you see where other people have played. And I think just reaching out to people, I remember when I was first kind of I want a tour. I just remember I went out for coffee with a couple people and just did the awkward Instagram DM where you're like, hi, can I take you for a beer and ask you some questions? 'Cause I don't know. I think, people have done it before and there's no need to completely restart over and over. So I think, looking at past tours.
Strategery.
Exactly.
Who makes up your live band and what do they contribute to the Sam Lynch experience?
Ooh. To be honest, it's a new venture for me playing with other people. And I feel really, really lucky to have played with the people that I have. So Laura Resnick has played with me a number of times, violin and keyboards as well. Jonah Ocean has played with me as well, and he's so talented. They were both with me for a show that I played in September, which was really special at the Vogue. And then other than that, I guess my most recent show that I played a few weeks ago, or I guess last month, at the Fox was the largest number of humans that I've played with before. And so that was a really special night. That was with Stephanie Chapman on violin, who is so incredible. Josh Content-Perdue on drums. Ethan Hulbert on bass. Mark Sutherland playing saxophone. And Laura Resnick on keys. And then other than that, I've also had Michael Moroniak play bass for me in the past. I used to live with Josh and Mike, so they were, I guess, officially the first two people that I ever played with. They were just my roommates, and they were just so on board to play. And we ended up playing a lot of my songs kind of a little rock band. It was pretty fun because they were just so excited, and I was so excited, and so the songs kind of got a little more energetic. So. Yeah,
I'm just picturing your friend on bass just rocking out a little too hard.
Oh my god, I just
stomping around like a dinosaur.
If you can imagine, the most enthusiastic player, that is Michael. I love him so much. He just take any project that he takes on, he's so excited about it. And he hadn't really ever played bass. Really in a band, and so he just was so excited, and it was just it made me excited. So yeah, I feel so lucky to have played with the people that I've played with, and it's always just kind of it's so humbling when people are like, yes, I'm willingly gonna take time out of my life to listen to your songs and to play your music. It's kind of mind-blowing to me, but I'm so grateful for it. Yeah,
and it's I imagine handy that you've played number of shows with people who also played on the EP.
Yes, this is true. Yes. Totally. As you mentioned, the EP is just three songs, so most of my sets are a little bit longer than three songs. But,
We're going to play them again.
And there's one more time again. Through. Yeah, but no, absolutely. It's the best when you can just fully trust people that you're on stage with, so... Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. What would you say has been your most memorable show to date?
yeah, probably the Vogue show. Yeah. It was so ridiculous. It was, yeah, I don't even know. That was a show that, like, and I don't know, I kind of struggle with that one a little bit, like, speaking about it, because I'm, you know, I'm so grateful for that opportunity, and I felt so fortunate to be on that stage. But it was, like, it was really something that I, like, I wasn't expecting to have that opportunity for, like, a long time, you yeah. know? So when it came to me, of course, I was like, well, yeah, of course. But I found myself, like, on the day of, like, being on the stage for soundcheck and just being like, what the fuck is happening? How did I, like, what? Wait, what? This is happening right now.
Yep.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just tried my best to, like, again, just, like, be as present as I could. And, like, the fact that I was playing before arguably one of my favorite artists of all time was, like, another thing that I'm like, what? Like, this wasn't supposed to happen yet.
Not this soon?
Like, what?
Yeah.
But it's, like, you know, like, with anything, you never really know what's going to happen and when, so you just kind of got to roll with it. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just, like, I felt so humbled and so fortunate to be on that stage and so grateful to have Laura and Jonah up there with me playing those songs. And, yeah, I just kind of, like, just tried to, like, remember to breathe the whole time and, like, look out and, like, actually look out, not just, like, stare at the back corner of the ceiling, you know? Yeah, it was just... It was pretty incredible.
You got a live recording from that too.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. It just felt, you know, it felt like one that I would want to remember, you know, and like I kind of joke sometimes that like I black out on stage because, you know, you're just kind of in it and then you walk off and you're like, did I play my songs? I don't know. So yeah, that I feel really I'm so happy to have that because I, you know, I the first time I watched it back, I was like, oh, cool,
that did happen.
I was there,
yeah,
I was there,
that's
it was
me,
happening. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that was a really really special thing.
Yeah, that sounds like it.
Yeah.
Who have been some of your favorite local acts to play with here in Vancouver?
Some of my favorite. Well, actually recently, I played a So Far Sounds show, I guess about a month ago, with a band called Adara, which I hadn't heard of before, and they blew my mind. They were so good. I highly recommend you check them out. Their live setup is like quite expansive and they just were so great. And it was, you know, I'm really grateful for So Far because, it's like, it gives you the opportunity to, as an audience member, like see usually three quite varied acts, but then also as an artist, like to be able to share the bill with two artists who are, or, you know, are groups that are vastly different than you. It's a pretty sweet thing. So, Adara, that was awesome. And I really loved it. I really love Alexandria Mayo. She's awesome and her music is incredible. And any time that I've been able to share a stage with her has been a good one. Who else? Oh, I mean, I love Cassidy Waring. She's like the most badass lady friend that I have. And she's such a force. I don't know. She's awesome. So anytime I get to like be around her while she's playing is the best. Jasper Sloan Yip is super awesome. We haven't actually ever shared a bill, so I don't know why I'm bringing him up, but
I'm surprised you haven't. you'd fit very well on a bill with him.
Yeah, I was able to see kind of like his full show last week, the week before. And yeah, and Steph Chapman also plays with him, so that was really sweet. But yeah, that's, I don't know. I'm feeling like I'm not hitting the names that I should be hitting, and the second that we walk away, I'm gonna be like, ah, oh, I should have said. Anyway.
Well, that's all right. I mean, you kind of partially answered another question I have about bands or artists that you'd recommend bringing on the show for a future episode, and we haven't had any of those on the show except for Jasper Sloan yet. So.
Okay, right on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotta keep those folks in mind for sure.
Totally.
What's your favorite local release of 2018? You can rattle off a few if one is too hard.
Favorite local releases.
Local.
Local releases. See, I do feel kind of bad because I like, I do keep up to date, but in terms of like the years and stuff, it all just, I don't know. I listen to it. I'm like, I really liked that. Or, you know, and it's not, I don't necessarily categorize in like best of 2018. Like I have a really hard time with that. So I'm like, I don't know when, like what month is it even? Like, I don't even know. Okay. Best of, oh my God. I'm really struggling. I'm not going to lie. Cause like now I just feel like I have the names floating around that I just have mentioned. So I don't know when Sam put out his record, but I love
Sam
that.
Tudor. Yeah, he put out his record this year.
Okay, great.
According to one. Harley Small.
Perfect.
It's his fault if I get it wrong.
That
I can't look at the internet right now.
No problem.
I'm hosting
I think
a
Jasper
radio show.
Did, too.
Did he? Did Post Meridian? I feel it came out late.
It just came out on vinyl.
It just came out on vinyl.
I think it was a little
it was
bit before
2017.
July.
I think it came out late last year. Yeah, but
damn it's not.
Jasper. Come out with something new.
Right?
Have you heard the new, that? Well, the Haley Blaze EP?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. Yes, I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of her. I think she's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah, come on. She is hilarious. Yeah, and her music is awesome. And I've seen her play solo, and I've also seen her play with a band. She's so fun. So fun to watch, and her songs are awesome. I loved her EP.
We had her play the Snug Concert Series, and I have to say, like, that was the best and most awkward interview I've had.
Excellent.
For the Snug Concert Series. It was pretty great.
Awesome.
I usually hate my interview videos because I feel like a dork a doofus, but... She matched my energy.
That's the best. Cool.
A lot of softballs thrown back at me.
You reminded me of some humans. Some of my pals, Booty EP put out an EP that I love, and they're great. So that's one that
did
I
they drop think. That? Because I know they dropped a single, but I guess they did drop an EP earlier this year.
Well, if not, they've put out at least a handful of songs.
Yes.
And I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
So
they're great.
They're great.
We're going to have them on the show at some point.
Awesome.
What? Eventually, we'll get to this point where we're like, oh, no, we've run out of bands. Guess we got to start bringing people on again. That's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
There's just too much talent here.
Yeah.
What do you have planned for 2019? Are you looking to tour along with recording that new record?
Yes. Yes, I am looking to tour. February will be Montreal and Folk Alliance, which I'm super excited and very nervous for. And then hopefully new music in spring of 2019. And then hopefully in the summer, I'd love to play. There's some festivals in BC that I would really love to play. So we're kind of like hearing back on those things now. Hopefully I'd love to do some summer festival touring. And then I'd love to, kind of a big goal for me in the next year is, I'd love to be direct support for somebody on a tour. So, I'm really excited to be, Cassia Edwards. Do you know Cassia Edwards?
Yeah,
we've had her on
the show. We did an episode with her and Gentle Mind, who she also manages.
Yeah, totally. So, I've been like super excited to be working with Cassia in the last few months, and with Watchdog Management. So, that's kind of like a really, really big step for me, career wise. So, it's a totally new pace for sure, which is exciting. It's going to be a lot of like kind of uncharted territory, which I'm excited about. Probably less self-booked things.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you got some good support going on.
Building a bit of a team, which is, it's so foreign to me. Cassia can attest to this. I'm kind of like, but I can do that. And she's like, I know, but that's not your job anymore. I'm like, oh, okay.
I'm giving up the reins.
No, it's like, and it's great. It's a great, it's a lot more freedom and a lot more opportunity to just write and do the thing that I'm supposed to do, I guess.
It's almost like that's the reason why bands and artists get managers.
It's weird. Huh. Yeah, who knew?
Well, my co-host is telling us that we got to wrap this up. How can listeners check out your music and keep up with everything you're up to?
I exist on the internet. So I'm on Facebook and Instagram and Spotify and Bandcamp and iTunes and all of those places. So there, on the internet.
Good stuff. All Sam Lynch or Sam Lynch Music, or what's your handle?
Yeah, Sam Lynch Music for most, or Sam Lynch, yeah. Or, like, preferably if you see me in real life, that would be, like, the most ideal way to stay in touch.
For sure. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you.
This has been a lot of fun. Thanks for listening. We're your hosts, James Olson.
And Travis Noel.
Pacific Sound Radio is produced by Jaden Fraze. Travis, how can people keep up with what we're doing?
You can check us out on Facebook, Pacific Sound Radio, as well as our Instagram at Pacific Sound Radio, Twitter at Pacific S Radio, YouTube, Pacific Sound Media, as well as our website, PacificSoundRadio.com.
If you know a local band or artist that you think should appear as guests on our show, let us know. Fill out the form on our website or send us an email to talkpsr@gmail.com. As always, we are live on the air every Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. only on Save On Radio. We're going to leave you with one more song from Sam Lynch. Be sure to check out her debut EP, Lights and Lines, available on Spotify, Apple Music, and wherever else you stream your tunes. This is Make Light.
Everything you thought you had left.